We'll go with it.
I'll open the House Committee on Environment and Water and open a public hearing on House Bill 3178. Representative Hanna, this is our first hearing of this bill. Tell us all about it. Bring up anyone else who needs to be here. I don't know. Representative Clem is here.
I'm not sure that Representative Clem is going to make it, Mr. Chair. And if he does, he can follow up on my comments.
All right.
Are you prepared?
I'm ready to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, colleagues. For the record, Bruce Hanna, State Representative, House District 7. I'm here to provide testimony and make a few brief comments on House Bill 3178 and to express my strong support for this very simple bill. I appreciate the opportunity to present it to you. This is a classic piece of legislation one might expect from a constituent who I think brings a good idea to the legislature. This is a constituent who lives on the North Umpqua River, who bought a piece of property, several acres, and discovered that he literally had more water rights attributable to the property than was necessary for the uses of that particular piece of property. He, in turn, decided that he would like to maintain the water right, but at the same time, gesture of goodwill, give the water right back to the state of Oregon. He did that, but what he found was not only was he required to pay to give the state the water right back, then every 5 years when that same water right lease came up, he was required to pay again over and over and over in order to give the state a water right. Since he wasn't being compensated for the water right, he was merely giving the state the water right, he figured that probably was the wrong way to go. This legislation simply corrects that. Upon passage, the bill would require anyone who grants this type of water right to the state to pay only the initial fee, which this gentleman said, I'm willing to pay the initial fee, but not the renewal fees on the five-year basis. I trust you would all agree that for someone to give the state something, it seems a bit unusual that we would charge them to do so. I would ask that you send House Bill 3178 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And again, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill.
Thank you, Representative Hanna. Are there questions? Do you have any sense of what the impact on the... I'm actually looking for... our fiscal or revenue statements. Do you have any sense of what the impact on the agency?
Chair, there's not an exact number here. It is hardly measurable. This is an instance in which people intend to add to the conservation efforts of water. It doesn't happen often. Obviously, if you are an owner of in-stream water rights, you have the option to sell that right to a commercial or other user, and in many cases, that's what happens is the right is sold. In the case of those who would like to promote fish habitat or other uses, this allows those people to do that. It is not a common practice, so it's not very often.
We'll get a hear from the agency in a moment. Beth, do we have what sort of paperwork, if any, do we have accompanying this bill?
There is no fiscal impact statement yet.
So we're still waiting. It sounds like for a fiscal impact statement. And see if there are any further questions, Representative Smith.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing this bill, Representative Hanna. I think the only question I had, the story you tell us seems like a compelling one and one that should be resolved. Do you have any guess of how common this is or rare this is? Do we anticipate it having a significant fiscal impact? Just because I know, you know, some of us were testifying on behalf of the Water Resource Department budget as we try to do water development projects for agriculture, et cetera, and in-stream benefit. What do we know?
Yeah. They're going to have to answer that question. What I do know in the conversations, I brought this bill forward in the last session. So what I do know from back then was literally this just doesn't happen too often because people have the option of selling the right. So for someone to say, I just want to donate it for the cause. The other piece and a detail about this is, and again, this is from this constituent, the idea here isn't that this be in perpetuity. It is that They pay the upfront fee, and then if the title changes to the property, they sell the property, then the new owner has to renew that. So it doesn't go on forever. But if you bought your house and lived there 30 years and paid the fee in order to give the state water, that'd cover it, as long as no title change. And I think the agency might be able to come closer to answering the question of how often. My understanding is, again, very rarely.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you letting me get up front. I'll be next door.
Thanks. Katie Fass, Brenda Bateman, and David Pilts, if the three of you could. Sorry, we might have pulled that sign-up sheet too soon for folks who are interested in testifying on this bill, but I got these three notes. If there's anybody else who is here to testify on this bill, please let Sue, our committee assistant, know. And Brenda, let's begin with you, if we could.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, my name is Brenda Bateman with the Water Resources Department. Thank you for the opportunity to make a few comments on House Bill 3178 this afternoon. This is at a time when the department is being asked to consider its fees very carefully and make sure that it's recovering costs for all that it does. This bill is as a request to reduce fees on in-stream applications for lease with some certain caveats from $100 to $50 per year, and it's also asking us to defer collection of some fees on in-stream lease renewals. And so, as we heard just a few minutes ago, there are actually not a lot of instances that we come across for these types of transactions each year. The fiscal loss in revenue is actually, just under about $5,000 in either the reduced revenues for the leases or deferred revenues from the renewals. But the rule writing that this bill would require and the actual tracking of whether a landowner has or has not yet retired or sold or not sold the land, which would be new workload for us, outweighs the revenue loss by just a little bit. It's a bit more than $5,000. So this is an interesting bill for us. We actually have worked with this landowner in question, and in his particular case, you may have picked this up from the history, it was perhaps case of needing to be or requesting to be grandfathered into a system where water was placed in stream at no fee. And then when our fee schedule kicked in and it was time to renew a few years later, all of a sudden a fee was there in place. He approached the agency and we actually worked with him to refund some of that money and also look at cases like that in the future if that were to come up again and to surprise landowners who had been in the same situation. So we've actually worked with him on the particular details of his case, and I don't know how necessary this bill is moving forward.
Thank you, Brenda. Before we move on, let's see if there are any questions. Representative Barnhart.
Are you saying then that landowner's issue has been dealt with and taken care of and that he's not paying a fee?
We have worked with the landowner. We actually refunded him, I believe, half of that fee, and then with a promise to refund in the future, when the paperwork is filed, if we're notified, just so the staff person knows of that case.
Follow up?
We've worked with him directly and refunded most of that money.
All right. Does that mean that you're not going to be charging him in the future?
That's as I understand it.
Thank you.
The way
that's
we're
what I just wasn't clear from what you actually said.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You, Mr. Chair.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brenda, is the 537.348, is that all of the in-stream water right leases, or is that some specific type?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know the reference right off the top of my head. I'd have to look at it.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow.
I was just wondering if that was the lease to the state or if it was leases in general.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I should look and make
thanks.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions for the department? Stay up here, Brenda, because we may come back. Katie or...
For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation, and Oregon Farm Bureau opposes 3178 due to equity issues. This is requiring workload at the department, and there's a fiscal cost associated with it, and the ability to transfer or lease water rights in stream actually protects that water right for future use. You have to remember Oregon has forfeiture laws in place. So if you don't use your water right for 5 years, that water right is forfeitured and goes back to state use and kind of back in the pool for junior users. One tool to maintain your water right is to actually lease it in stream for a temporary amount of time, and you can also extend that lease over time. But it does require workload at Water Resources Department, and there's an added value to the landowner in being able to maintain that water right even though they are not putting it to beneficial use on their land. And with that, I'd be happy to answer some questions.
Okay, let's hear from... Go ahead.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Pills. I'm here on behalf of the Freshwater Trust. Freshwater Trust is a new organization, which is the result of a recent merger between the Oregon Water Trust and Oregon Trout. I'll make two brief points today that'll both kind of echo what Katie and Brenda have said. First, this budget climate is the wrong time to cut any revenue source for the Water Resource Department. And second, charging a fee for in-stream leasing is reasonable since leasing has both public and private benefits. The department is looking at cutting almost a third of its budget in 2009-2011, and much of the discussion this session has been on how do we increase the department's budget and decrease their overdependence on general fund support. In this context, it seems somewhat out of place to be discussing cutting any revenue source, no matter how small. And I can admit that it is a small revenue source. In the 15 years that the Oregon Water Trust has worked with the Water Resource Department, we've worked on about 350 leases and lease renewals. At $100 for a new lease and $50 for a renewal, that comes out to about $27,000 total, or a yearly contribution of about $1,800. I believe the official term for that in water management professionals' lingo would be a drop in the bucket. But as Brenda noted, the fiscal impacts do go beyond just the loss of revenue. Oh, yeah. My point is okay. That if there's any discussion about in-stream leasing fees, perhaps we should be having a discussion about raising fees as opposed to lowering them. The department's already operating beyond its capacity on in-stream leasing. Processing these leases takes a lot of time in Salem, and enforcing the leases in the field takes an even greater amount of time. So there's a significant workload. The next point, just briefly, I'd like to dispel the idea that in-stream leasing or giving this right to the state has only public benefits. As Katie pointed out, in-stream leasing does have very important public benefits. Otherwise, the Oregon Water Trust and other groups wouldn't work so hard on trying to encourage leasing. But the public benefits aren't the only benefits. Many landowners see in-stream leasing as a way to benefit the environment, but also as a management tool. If you don't use your water right for 5 years, as Katie said, you can lose it. But if you know ahead of time that something's coming up that will make it hard for you to use your water, or you can enter the water right into a lease, and the 5-year forfeiture clock will not be a factor. In situations where the landowner is only motivated by public benefits, groups like the Oregon Water Trust, the Deschutes River Conservancy, and the Klamath Basin Rangeland Trust are usually happy to work with landowners to pay for in-stream leasing fees. And in other situations where it's just the landowner is using leasing purely as a management tool, it seems perfectly reasonable that they shoulder the relatively low cost for applications and renewals. Because of these dual public and private benefits, and because of the looming budget cuts, we believe it's the wrong time to diminish any revenue source for the Water Resource Department. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Questions for Eben? Ms. Fess, did I understand correctly that you'd be opposed to the bill tonight?
That is correct.
Okay. Thanks. Any further questions? Seeing none, you're all released. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3178 and open a work session on House Bill 3090. And Christy, if you could walk us through the amendment. And do we have it at the dais?
Yes.
Okay, so House Bill 3178, members, we had a...
Yes.
3090, sorry. We're on House Bill 3090. We had a public hearing on this bill related to CCNRs and clotheslines. I'm sure you recall it. And,
oh, yes.
We will hear about the amendments that that my office has developed.
Thank you, Chair Cannon, members of the committee. We come today with the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 3090.
Will you identify yourself?
My name is Christy Schlitt, and I'm not used to testifying in committee. I'm Representative Cannon's legislative aide. So this is essentially, this is a gut and stuff amendment. So everything that's in the Dash 5s is what the bill would look like. And these are the amendments that Kelly Ross asked for. You might remember he was the one person who testified in opposition to the bill. And he was from the, not the CIA, but the CAI, the Community Associations Institute.
As far as you know.
As far as I know. I don't know Kelly that well, but the Community Associations Institute has told me today, about 30 minutes ago, that they are no longer opposed to the bill as stands in the Dash 5s. I'll tell you what those Dash 5s do, thus giving us a beautiful bill that no one opposes. The Dash 5s basically just ensure and clarify that homeowners associations can still make reasonable restrictions on size, appearance, and location of solar energy systems, including solar panels, which are already protected by statute, and clotheslines, which we bring in with this particular bill. The other item that Kelly wanted addressed in the Dash 5s, and which he has said is adequately addressed, is that it clarifies that condo owners are not authorized to install solar energy systems on common elements, nor on elements of property that are maintained by a homeowners association. And that's all they do.
Great. Let's see if there are any questions from
Mr. Chair. I'm still reading it.
Representative,
I apologize.
Yep. Chrissy, I think it'd be helpful to reiterate the fact that solar devices are currently protected under state law from restriction or certain kinds of restriction in covenants.
Right, right. Under current law, you cannot prohibit solar panel systems from being installed. Planned communities and condo associations are prohibited from an outright ban. That is correct.
And the main gist of this bill would be to amend the definition of solar devices to include clotheslines, therefore treating them the same way that we treat solar panels, for instance, by saying in law that a CC&R cannot place certain kinds of restrictions on their use.
Chair Cannon, that is absolutely correct.
So, members, I recognize that this creates sort of raises some interesting, important sort of philosophical issues related to kind of state law and our relationship with covenants between homeowners. I respect the views of those who say that this is not the appropriate place to be setting those kinds of requirements. I do, however, you know, think it's worth pointing out that we do set these kinds of requirements all the time. We heard testimony that that the main impact of this passing this bill would be to ensure that the template for these CC&Rs does not include a restriction on clotheslines. It is, we heard testimony that the template that is generally not probably looked at very carefully today does place unnecessary restrictions, in my view, on clotheslines. So we're not able to move the bill to the floor today. We do not have a fiscal on it. You're going to hear a recurring theme in committee today. You're hearing it for the second time now that we don't have a fiscal on this bill. However, I would accept a motion on the Dash 5 amendments. At least we could put those in the bill and then take this up again on Tuesday. And if the votes are there to send it along to the floor, that's what happens. If not, then it doesn't move on, and that will be sad for some of us, but that's the way this process works. So, Representative Gilliam.
Mr. Chair, would you entertain a motion?
I would.
Mr. Chair, I move Dash 5 amendments to 3090.
Thank you. Representative Gilliam moves the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 3090. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so moved. The Dash 5s are in House Bill 3090, and we will close the work session on House Bill 3090 and carry it over, carrying House Bill 3090 over until Tuesday. I'm going to open a work session on, Representative Greenlick, House Bill 3367. Come on up. I think we have amendments here, and
Dash two.
And this bill, members, we do have our paperwork in place. Okay. So tell us about the amendment, Representative, and we'll see if we can send it on its way.
The amendment does two or three things, and it meets the objections, the mild objections that several people had. It puts the notion of shield lighting firmly into the building codes with conforming language to the building code language. It defines what shield lighting is.
For the record.
I'm just too anxious to testify, man. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I'm Mitch Greenlick, State Representative, House District 33. It provides a clear definition of what shield lighting means. The last definition we had in the original bill was a little archaic. It's now modern. It gives a municipality a chance to determine whether shield lighting is practical for a public building based on the historical character of the building. And I believe it also defines specifically certain utilities, small utility districts, out of the bill as they want it. So I think it is now perfected. It has everybody at least liking it. And a lot of people loving it, including me.
Let's see if there are any questions. I think we've heard good testimony on this bill last time. It sounds like there is no opposition, or none of which we're aware. I would accept a motion on the dash twos.
I move the dash twos, Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 3367. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Dash twos are in 3367. Representative Smith?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3367 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves House Bill 3367 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
No.
Sue, will you please call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative
Benz?
Aye.
Representative
Boone?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Kim? Aye.
Chair
Kim? Aye. And the motion carries. This bill is on its way to the floor, and Representative Greenlick, will you please carry it?
I'd be delighted to. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
And with that, I will close work session on House Bill 3367. And open a work session on House Bill 3463. Members, we heard about the amendments to 3463 and, in fact, adopted the Dash 6 amendments to this bill on Tuesday. Give folks, including me, a moment to locate it in our very tall stacks. And Representative Bailey or Jensen, do any additional words of commentary on this bill?
I have no additional words of commentary.
All right.
Chair, Bailey? I think we covered it pretty well during the last committee meeting.
Well, I think
other than to note that there may be one minor technical change just relating to the date that Ledge Council assures us is pretty easy and could potentially be fixed on the Senate side, but does not change the policy or the content really of the bill.
Great. Okay. So we've adopted the Dash 6 amendments already. We have both the fiscal and revenue statements indicating no revenue or fiscal impacts. And with that, I would accept a motion to move this bill along.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3463 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey moves House Bill 3463 to the floor with due pass recommendation as amended. Any discussion? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say that I will be voting for the bill, but it concerns me because it does look as though we're protecting the in-state activities. But on the other hand, a number of my constituents raise this type of material, so it's hard for me to complain about it. But from the standpoint of the broader view, it does look challenged. But I'll be voting for it.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, so we call the roll.
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
No.
Chair Kim.
Aye. And the motion carries. House Bill 3463 is off to the floor. And I will close House Bill 34. Oh, we need a carrier. Representative Bailey. You want to rock, paper, scissors for it, or are you going to take this?
Mr. Chair, I would be happy, but I would defer to my colleague whose bill this is on the top line. So, Representative Jensen, I would defer to you.
Representative Jensen, will you carry the bill?
I'll be happy to get crucified.
Representative Jensen will carry House Bill 3463 to the floor. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 3463 and open a work session on House Bill 2186. And locate that in the bill file and ask Andy Ginsberg to describe the dash 6 amendments to House Bill 2186.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Andy Ginsberg, Air Quality Administrator with DEQ, and I'm sure the audience will sigh a collective sigh of relief when I say that I'll be much, much, much briefer than I was at the last hearing. I just wanted to quickly let you know what's in the Dash 6 amendments. It's a complete replacement of the bill, but the changes are, first, that we've added sunset provisions into the bill, primarily at the request of Representative Barnhart, so that within each section, in Section 3, you'll see language that says that after a certain date that no new standards can be adopted. We also, at the request of Representative Boone, added a delayed effective date to the bill so that you'll see in Sections 5 and 6 on page 8 that any rules adopted by the Commission under this bill would not go into effect until after the 2011 legislative session, and that's obviously intended to give you all a chance to review the rules before they would go into effect. We also added, at the request of Representative Boone, a report to the interim committees and also to subsequent legislative sessions on our implementation of the bill, and that's in Section 7 on page 8. And the report would identify what rules were adopted, how we complied with all the restrictions in the bill, and also identify any significant policy decisions that were made by the Environmental Quality Commission in implementing the legislation. And then there are a few more detailed amendments to address some of the issues that were raised in testimony at the last hearing. For example, under the low carbon fuel standard, one person noted that we had no baseline for the reduction. We say 10% reduction in carbon intensity from gasoline and diesel by the year 2020, but the testimony said from what baseline, so we added that. That's from 2010. And as another example, in the greenhouse gas containing products, we added a provision that ensures that the Environmental Quality Commission would not adopt any requirements that standards that require a product to be made just for Oregon. We recognize that we don't have a large enough market to drive national producers to make a special formulation just for our state. So if another state adopts a standard, whether it's California or Texas or any other state that adopts a greenhouse gas content standard, then we could opt into that as well. But we wouldn't be requiring anything new just for our state. And there are a few other technical changes like that that I could describe if you'd like, but I'll be happy to stop there and see if there are any questions.
Thank you, Andy. Let's see if there are any questions from members of the committee.
Representative Smith. This is an odd question and perhaps impossible to answer accurately. But let's say the bill started out like this. with your hands, and if you want to describe that for the audible record, have we chopped the bill down to here, down to here, down to here, down to, you know, sort of give me sort of a sense, so I have an idea, down to here, down to here, you know, give me a sense of kind of where we are. With the hands, man, I know, if you're willing,
I'm trying to get clear on the scale, so allowing the commission to adopt whatever they want.
Sure, there you go.
Okay, and this is what the bill actually does. So,
okay, great.
The bill initially authorized the commission to adopt six different measures, mostly related to transportation, to reduce greenhouse gases, but provided very little direction from the legislature to the commission on how to do that. Now the bill is very specific, identifies exactly how the commission will implement those authorities, and in my view leaves just the technical details to be figured out by the commission. So I think it has gone down to a very specific and narrow delegation.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What does this mean to you? just give me your update on, I hate to use this word, on the consensus of the stakeholders, in your view, as we come up to dash, and I just got handed dash fives.
And I'm going to give Representative Boone an opportunity to introduce those and talk about those in a moment before we do any votes.
As far as you know, on dash six, what's that? What's the answer to that question?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, I don't think consensus would be a word I would use. I think that I can say that we have attempted to address all of the specific concerns that have been raised by all stakeholders, but there are many stakeholders that still are not in favor of this bill, and in some cases it doesn't have to do with specific problems with the bill, but more general concerns about the state addressing climate change or the Environmental Quality Commission adopting rules to implement climate change. So I think there are still a number of stakeholders who are opposed to this legislation.
Thank you.
Representative Boone. Oh, I saw Representative Boone, then we'll go to Representative Benson.
Okay, thanks. Andy, I received, again, this is the first one, but I've had this email coming at me from my Les Schwab people in district, and there's two. I have two, one in Tillamook and one in Clatsop County. And I'll just read what their concerns are about this going forward. I don't think they're against, you know, climate change per se and doing what we can to prevent any more damage, but they say they don't believe it's in the best interest of Oregon and its consumers to adopt standards based on a yet-to-be-determined policy from other states. The issue of tire roll, and they're considering tires, I'm pretty sure, tire rolling resistance is not settled. However, by next session, there will be more information to guide the legislature and the DEQ on this important topic. And having talked with them, they would support these actions after more information is available. So I guess in the dash sixes, and thank you for accommodating those of us who had concerns about how the bill was written, I still don't think we're there with going ahead and adopting standards without the information first. So I just wondered if you could speak to that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Boone. It is true that California has not yet adopted tire efficiency standards. They're beginning with a labeling and education program, and it's possible that they'll find that that's adequate and decide not to adopt standards, but their legislation does authorize them to go ahead and adopt standards. If they do adopt standards, we are not required to adopt them. We would evaluate that carefully and determine whether or not it's in the best interests of Oregon. And again, under this bill, we would be reporting to you regularly about what we find in that area. I can tell you that the tire manufacturers, which are represented by the Rubber Manufacturers Association, told me that in their industry, they're unable to develop and distribute different types of tires for different states. So their view is that once California adopts tire efficiency standards, those are the tires that will be delivered to Oregon, whether or not we adopt this legislation. and on that basis asked if we would just drop the provision because they saw it as unnecessary, that these are the tires we're going to actually get no matter what we do. My concern with that approach is that we've heard that many times before, and there have been cases where California adopts standards and then we end up getting those items that don't meet California standards end up in Oregon, so we end up with the higher emitting, lower quality products here in Oregon. I think it's unlikely in this case. I think the manufacturers were sincere that we're going to get the same tires whether or not we adopt the statute. So I view this as kind of an insurance policy that we have the authority to opt into the standards in case there is any, let's say, dumping of lower quality tires on the state of Oregon. But I think I think the short answer is that Les Schwab is going to receive these tires once California adopts the standard, whether or not we adopt them, according to the manufacturers.
And Andy, would it be permissible for the EQC to adopt a rule that required a type of a rule that California had not adopted or another state had not adopted related to tires?
Mr. Chair,
be the only state that
specifically in this bill, at the request of the tire manufacturers, we indicated that the commission can't adopt a standard that would require them to make a special type of tire just for Oregon. So it doesn't require us to adopt California standards. If some other state adopted a standard, there's none that we know of that are pursuing it right now, but if some other state did, we could evaluate that and consider opting into it as well. But the likely scenario is that California would adopt a tire standard, and then we would evaluate it and determine if we want to opt into it or if it's even necessary for us to opt into it. If it turns out that the tire manufacturers are correct and the only tires delivered in Oregon are those that are compliant with California standard, it may be just unnecessary for us to add a regulation. But just to address Les Schwab's concern, nothing, in my view, nothing in this bill would change the type of tire that would end up getting delivered to them according to what the manufacturers are telling us.
Short follow-up, thank you. In the Dash 6s, which is now the new bill, I didn't see it, and because they're kind of long, and I was trying to read them up here. I'm wondering if there's any efforts toward determining economic impacts to Oregon consumers, Oregon businesses, and the technical feasibility of what we're trying to do here.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, there are some specific provisions in the bill about that, and they're mostly in Section 4, which is beginning on page 7, which requires us to evaluate safety, feasibility, the net reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, cost effectiveness, potential impacts on other media, air quality, water quality, waste disposal, flexibility, and looking at the overall benefits and costs of the rules in relation to other rules that are under development by the state. And that is added to the existing provisions in the Oregon Administrative Procedures Act that require us to do a fiscal and economic analysis of any rule that our commission adopts, including holding a fiscal advisory committee to specifically look at impacts on small businesses and potential ways to mitigate impacts on small businesses. So it's built into the APA and then enhanced by specific language in this bill.
Follow-up,
yep,
clarification. What's the APA and where is that in here?
Sorry, it's the Administrative Procedures Act, and it's in ORS Chapter 183, and it applies to all rulemaking that any agency does. It's the procedures that we use that require public notice, advisory committees, and economic analysis. And at DEQ and with the Environmental Quality Commission, we actually go beyond the requirements of Chapter 183, especially on programs like this. We would form, on any rulemaking that would be done under this bill, we would form an advisory committee that would have all of the affected stakeholders and experts and consultants and evaluate very thoroughly all those cost factors in helping us actually develop the rule before we'd even put it on public notice.
Thank you.
Representative Benz, Chairman Quick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Andy, I want to say again, you've done a lot of work on this, but there's a space between me and this bill and maybe a lot of us. And I one of the things that I've heard you say is that this authority that we are, by this bill, proposing to delegate to the DEQ is specific and narrow. I think you said that a little earlier this afternoon. And I'm trying to find the specificity, and I'm trying to find the narrowness, but it's not here. Let me just point out why it's not. In Section 3, page 2 of the Dash 6 amendments, it says the commission may adopt low-carbon fuel standards for gasoline, diesel, and fuels used as a substitute for gasoline or diesel. And then there is a walkthrough of this phase-in schedule and other elements. If you go to the end of the bill, or the Dash 6 amendments, there is a Section 4 which talks about evaluation, but there's no restriction to those standards at the end of your bill. So I guess I need to ask you, when you say that these are specific and narrow delegations, tell me where you're finding that specificity and that narrowness.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, the narrowness of the delegation is in directing the Commission, for example, to adopt a low-carbon fuel standard that achieves a 10% reduction in carbon intensity from the 2010 baseline to 2020. And I would compare that, for example, to the authority that the California General Assembly provided to the California Air Resources Board in Assembly Bill 32, which is the basis that California uses for their greenhouse gas legislation, where it directs California to adopt measures necessary to achieve their greenhouse gas reduction goals. And that's the level of specificity in their statute. It doesn't say whether or not they would use a low-carbon fuel standard to achieve that, or a cap-and-trade to achieve that, or any other specific measure, but it authorized them to adopt whatever measures are necessary. That's what I would consider to be a broad delegation. Ours, in contrast, lists six specific strategies, and these are strategies that have been identified by us and by many other states as the short list of strategies that are likely to provide near-term cost-effective reductions in greenhouse gas emissions with significant co-benefits also to other air pollution, to economic development, et cetera. And so by identifying just the six measures and not authorizing us to adopt any measures, the original bill was quite a bit more narrow of a delegation than what other states have. But this bill now provides a lot of detail and policy restriction on how to go about adopting those six measures, and leaves open, though, the technical details that I think are critical when you're adopting a low-carbon fuel standard, that, for example, that the level of detail that's in the rule, which will probably end up being something like 50 to 70 pages long, we wouldn't want to put in statute, because some of those details will change over time as we do more technical analysis. So the delegation here in this bill is as detailed and specific as I think it can be, and still allow the rules to have the flexibility needed so they can be feasibly and cost-effectively implemented.
Hello, Mr. Chair. Hello. The specific and narrow, I just disagree with you. It's specific only in that it calls out just six areas of investigation, or I'm sorry, five, I see, low fuel standard, the commercial products, the retrofit of trucks, and the tampering with pollution systems and then tires. But I just want to go for a moment. What is the definition of commercial products that appears on page 4, line 5? Disposal of consumer and commercial products. Actually, it says prevent venting during the use and disposal of.
So
I just want to ask, there's no chance that includes livestock. That's not what you're thinking. You're thinking of something that's been manufactured, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, that's correct. These would be products. Most likely, these would be spray cans or other types of containers that have greenhouse gases, high potency greenhouse gases contained within them. And it could also be appliances, though, that might have high potency greenhouse gases in them. But it would be specific products like that. And if you look at the language that was added in earlier versions of these amendments, there are quite a few exemptions and restrictions here. It doesn't apply to carbon dioxide. It doesn't apply to incidental greenhouse gases contained in the packaging. We've added a provision at the request of one stakeholder that we're not considering decomposition, greenhouse gases created by the decomposition of a product. This is really aimed at products where high-potency greenhouse gases are intentionally added as a major ingredient, primarily as propellants, or they're also used as cleaners and solvents. And another really key restriction here is that we can't adopt a standard that requires a new product to be made just for Oregon. So I think in evaluating this section, you have to keep in mind that some state has already required the manufacturer to reformulate this product. And so it's out there, it's commercially available, it's being sold to another state, and we're going to require it here also in Oregon so that we're limiting the release of these high-potency greenhouse gases. So all those restrictions together really narrow significantly what types of products we could regulate.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andy. Representative Boone, would you like to talk about the Dash 5 amendments that have been handed out?
Yeah, I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have spent quite a bit of time talking with various people in the room here and in my district about how we could come to some sort of agreement on this bill, and came up with these. And it addresses the general angst about the rule process and DEQ having this authority. And it kind of, it does everything in the bill except in a different, from a different purview, more of a let's go out and find out what the information is about what we want to do and report back to an interim committee, which might be this committee, might be another, and then also report back to the next legislative session, legislature, with the information. And I don't know if you have the copies, if you've read them or not, that one of the things that it does do, and specifically it looks at economic impacts on Oregon's consumers and economic impacts on Oregon businesses and the technical feasibility. I am not an engineer or a techie or anything in any of these areas, but I have been hearing from my constituents and concerned about the state of this economy, and they're trying to hang on in a lot of cases. They're just not sure they want to have their horse changed in midstream on at this point. And they all seem to agree that if it was done in this vein as a report, gathering information, and then coming back to the legislative interim committee with a report in September, by September 1st, that would be enough time to pre-session file a bill for the 2011 legislative session and put into effect these measures as bills. And if they work, if they, you know, whatever is happening, we've had 2 years to do this. It brings down the level of concerns with a lot of things, and I think we have agreement that we could move this forward. That being said, I think that we're trying to do a lot of things in this session, a lot of big things in this session, and I have concerns about moving too fast on such big issues and big important issues, not wanting to do any further economic harm to people who have concerns about what some of these measures might mean to them economically, to their business, to their homes, et cetera. But to a person, everyone I talked to of my constituents, and I had about 80 people, individuals, half of them, 40 individuals, were, I still count them because they're my constituents and I respond to them, but they were clearly from an advocacy group. They were identical emails, and in some cases, they forgot to take out the line that says, your name here. So they still get just as much attention in that sense, but it means less to me because it's not from their heart. They're not telling me why they don't like this or like it. They're just responding to someone saying, push this button, send it here. So the 40 people who did write to me, and one of them or two of them were from my Les Schwab dealers, and that is a big deal in my district. It may not mean much to some people in Portland. There are many, many different places to buy tires there, but there are very few places out there, and they're major, major employers. And not only that, but they service our areas in just incredible ways. They provide free service for our fire departments, for changing tires, for helping them get chains on rigs when they need to. They'll bring guys out to the scene and move equipment off the road, et cetera, things like that. This is a business that is a big deal in my district. And they will agree with these things, but they just not yet. They need more information before they take this, because it's a big deal. And I heard Andy mentioned about the California bill that's coming up and probably is voted on by now, today, but today they were going. And I did spend some time, folks, on this. This is the staff report California spent 18 months on and the additional appendices. And I did not read every page, but I spent with Andy and I spent an hour and a half with one of their guys down there last night on the phone. And I got to ask a lot of questions. And, you know, if California is just at that point, my thought is that maybe we could take that as, not reinvent the wheel, but take theirs as a starting point and apply it to Oregon and work from there. And also, if they're going to be, they're the big player in the room, if they're going to be the standard for these tires, then I'm not sure we really need to be doing that here, because we'll be getting their tires any, or that kind of tire here, because we're not going to be asking for a separate Oregon tire. So I would ask you to consider the -5 amendments, which may make it a little more easy for us to get this through this body, get the work done, lower the level of uneasiness around the area.
Do you want to make a motion and we'll discuss it?
I will. Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I would move the -5 amendments to House Bill 2186.
Representative Boone moves the -5 amendments to House Bill 2186. Thank you for bringing them forward and for the presentation. I think the purpose of a legislative committee is to have these kinds of discussions. I think this is how we reach better product, is through bringing our ideas forward, airing them, talking about them, ultimately having to vote on them. But I do appreciate all that you have already contributed to the discussion. Thank you, Representative Boone. Representative Smith.
I have a question and then a comment. I heard, and I may have a faulty memory, but I've heard different. Thanks very much for the testimony. It's not testimony. Thanks very much for your comments. About the California example, did California go, if we're wanting to adopt that in some respect, did they go interim lengthy process and micro detailed law after that, or did they go mildly simpler statute than agency process after that? Mr. Chair, I know that you may have the factual answer to that question.
I'll let Andy, maybe a more credible source than I.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, California went with a broad statutory authority and then rulemaking following that without subsequent legislative review.
Broader than this or narrower than this?
Much, much broader than this, or order of magnitude broader than this.
Okay. I have a comment.
Yeah.
I won't repeat, for interest of time at least, all of my comments from the last time we heard this, except to quote John Ledger, who's probably in the room somewhere, who offered on the record a very wise comment that our preference of forum will depend on where we think we'll get the best deal. And I think that and I will posit that the critiques on either side will have less to do with our critiques of the process and more to do with the subject matter and substance. The fundamental disagreement is about, in my mind, is about whether we think that our response to energy crises and climate change is the biggest risk to our current economic doldrums, or whether it might be our greatest opportunity to resolve them in a 21st century strange analog to World War II in the last century, helping to remove us from the depression. Because I fall, perhaps to my political detriment, as well as my lack of policy wisdom, on the side that I am betting that it might be our best bet out of those doldrums, I don't see the delegation of authority as a threat, but rather as probably the best way to deal with a complex and dynamic system, as we do with any number of policies with far broader delegations than here. So I will with respect to my colleague, Representative Boone, opposing the amendments, just because I don't think the delegation here is that big a deal. I think we answer a lot more complicated questions in water and PUC and any number of issues, a lot more complicated questions than this, or a lot of simpler issues than this, with broader delegations of authority. You know, it's not that big a deal except for the substance, which is a big deal.
Any further discussion on the Dash 5 amendments? I'll add my two cents. I also will be voting no on the amendments. The question before us with them is, should this bill, should 2186, instruct the agency to go out and spend a year and a half studying this issue, coming back to this 2011 legislature with recommendations for further legislation, or do we know enough about the scale of the problem and the potential scope of the answers? And I think California's work here is quite instructive to begin the rulemaking process. That rulemaking process under the Dash 6 amendments, which I hope we do adopt, would involve an advisory committee, as it always does, would be required under administrative rule to consider the cost effectiveness, et cetera, and would bring back a set of rules, potentially, that would be implemented after July 1st, 2011, assuming the 2011 legislature didn't act to amend the underlying statute. So I think that we have, due in part to the work of Representative Boone and Bernhardt and others, we have in the Dash 6 is an acceptable kind of compromise related to rulemaking authority. But again, I really do sincerely believe this is exactly the kind of place to be bringing these kinds of proposals, and I recognize and respect your effort, Representative, to try to find some common ground on this.
And trying to find that common ground and make things work here, they literally, the Dash 5s get the job done, same time frame, and basically can start with using California's model on their study, which they did, and I think it would shorten the time. And I just think I keep coming back to that with all, no disrespect to Andy or the department, but it's just, do we want to get this done or not? And I think that it would bring people together, and I'm going to make a suggestion here, if this doesn't go forward, that we also consider, no matter what comes forward, but that we consider maybe an Oregon Solutions project in this case, because we clearly have come to an impasse with this issue in this venue. And that is, if people don't know what Oregon Solutions is, it's housed at Portland State University. It's a negotiating mediation type model. They're very successful. I've sat on three of them. And they bring people of opposite views together, or people who can't come to an agreement on how to get something done, when they all want the same thing. And they sign a contract. The governor has to convene it. And they hire a facilitator, and it's very, very successful. And I can speak to having sat on one 2 years now in Tillamook on land use issues, flooding issues. If you think of Kevin's in the room, he probably could speak to that too, how successful it has been there. They actually have projects on the ground now that have actually been successful in a flooding situation, and there's more to come. And it's been a very positive experience for people, and I think that this process could also be a candidate for a solutions team.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I had not seen Representative Boone's proposed amendment until this afternoon. If this bill is going to have the impact that I know those who support it want it to have, it's going to be a dramatic impact. Otherwise, why the effort? And if it's going to be a dramatic impact, why are we delegating it to a DEQ to sort that out? It's as though we are taking something that folks want to have a dramatic impact and saying, this is too heavy for us to carry. Let's get it to the DEQ and let them fight through it. But they're not a legislative group. They're a rulemaking group. and they don't carry the fear of the voter with them. They're appointed, and so what we're doing is basically taking a problem that we just heard Representative Smith eloquently put it is going to have a dramatic impact, or he wouldn't be supporting it. And yet, this huge impact we are giving to someone else not even elected to deal with it. So I think that Representative Boone's approach is exactly the right approach for something this expensive, this challenging to our state. So, again, it's not a small matter. It's a big matter, or we wouldn't be dealing with it. And thus, I would strongly recommend we adopt her amendment.
Thank you for your comments. Let's see if there are any further discussion, Representative Smith.
Very briefly, I have to say, as challenging as it is, I think I agree with Representative Cannon. I think there are various among us who long for a mythical time when this process was engaged with the kind of discussion we're having now and not merely with transactional conversations that happen in the midst of an election where we trade some things for other things, and we hope that they are just ideas. I really respect all the comments that have been made, which I think have been made with both feeling hearts and thinking brains. I only want to make one thing clearer, that I don't believe the delegation of authority is a matter of the smallness or the bigness of the issue, but rather as a matter of its complexity and fast-movingness, where you see where we have delegated significant authority. There is no antitrust law in this country, really, if we didn't have significant, and that might be a wish of some people in the world, but we would have no antitrust law in this world, in this country, if we didn't have a very broad, far broader than this, delegation of authority. I don't think the issue is small or big, but rather whether it's an issue that changes a lot and is highly technical and complex, and it is not a matter of whether we should hide from or welcome the voters, but whether we should enable a process that can be iterative and continue on rather than meet once, 6 months every 2 years.
I think that reflects my view as well. I mean, I remember dealing with a bill in 2007 that attempted to set energy efficiency standards for appliances, and we were looking at these sort of eight numbers after the decimal point in units that I didn't comprehend. It was highly technical. It was product by product, and we've dealt with some energy efficiency standards that way. Others we have delegated to rulemaking. Given the complexity, the technical nature, the ever-changing nature of the technology, it seemed far more appropriate, in my view, to delegate that kind of standard setting to an advisory council, a rulemaking informed by an advisory committee made up of stakeholders that could get to, I think, a much better answer than we would be able to, at least over, years and years and years. So, I think this is a great discussion, respect the feeling and thinking of all members of this committee, and recognize that there's a real difference of opinion, seeing no one further in the queue. Sue, will you please call the roll on the dash fives?
Representative Bailey.
With respect to my colleague, no.
Representative Barnhart?
No.
Representative Benz?
Yes.
Representative
Boone? Yes.
Representative Jensen?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
No.
Chair Cannon?
No.
Oh. That is an excellent precedent, Captain. One that should be applauded.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
And the motion is not successful. I'll take a motion on the dash sixes. Sure.
I move the dash six amendments to House Bill 2186.
Representative Smith moves the dash six amendments to House Bill 2186. And those are dated April 21st. Just to remind folks, this was the dash sixes, the change that the dash sixes makes to previous versions of the bill is to significantly narrow and define the authority that we're turning over. It adds the sunset on new authority and stipulates that these rules would not be able to come into effect until after the 2011 legislative session. Appreciate the contributions that members of this committee made to these amendments. And if there is not any further discussion, Representative Bernhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very satisfied that the changes made in the Dash 6 amendments will deal with the concern that I raised the last time we discussed the bill, because it will require that additional work by the legislature in order to carry on the next phase of this process. And that was what my object was.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will honor my word to you and give you a courtesy vote. It's a courtesy vote only on this. I'll probably be voting no on the floor.
Thank you.
I just so, and I guess I should explain that, because I think this is such a large, as Representative Bentz has said, a large issue, and maybe it needs to be discussed further with more people in the room.
If there's no further discussion, we'll take the roll on the Dash 6 amendments.
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Bent.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
No.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gillard.
No.
Chair Cannon.
Aye. The motion is successful. Members, we only just received the fiscal statement on House Bill 2186, and I am going to carry over the work session on this bill until Tuesday, giving us an opportunity to take a look at that last piece of information before we make up our minds on whether to send this to the floor. But I think we have the bill in the form that it will go if it does, and we'll take it up on Tuesday. So with that, I'll carry over House Bill 2186 and close the work session on House Bill 2186. We will not be hearing House Bill 3369 today. It is posted for a work session on Tuesday. This is the Smith and Jensen project that we expect to... I like saying Smith and Jensen. And
a gun.
Exactly. And we will be dealing with that on Tuesday. Let's move on to House Bill 2155. This was one of the very first bills we heard in the session. We haven't come back to it for a long time. There are amendments on it. And Kevin, if you'd come on up, and if you need to bring anybody, please do. But tell us where we are with House Bill 2155.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, thank you. Kevin Moynihan, Assistant Director, Department of State Lands, Wetlands, and Waterways Conservation Division. What the amendments to House Bill 2155 do are remove two of the original five provisions in the bill. There was a provision related to changing the definition of intermittent stream that was somewhat controversial during the hearing. The department has decided not to move forward with that provision. We have also removed a provision dealing with repealing the estuarine provisions in statute at 196.830. And the third thing that the amendments to 2155 do are clarify some of the language in what we refer to as the agricultural exemption in ORS 196.905. That provides an exemption for agricultural activities on waters of the state, in particular wetlands. The language changes reflected in the amendment are changes that we discussed with the Oregon Farm Bureau. I believe we have their assent in those changes, and therefore we're proposing to change 196.905 with those changes that you see in the amendment. The other two provisions of the original bill remain. The fourth provision is one that would allow a multi-year billing up front on Department of State lands removal fill applications. We are authorized to issue applications for up to 5 years. Currently under statute, we're required to do an annual billing for each year of a multi-year permit. the provision would allow us to bill up front for the duration of a multi-year permit, and that would be at the discretion of the applicant if they decided to do that. And then the final remaining provision in House Bill 2155 is an exemption from regulation by the department for certain small voluntary habitat restoration projects to encourage those types of projects to go forward. So that's the extent of the amendments, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions? Yeah, Representative Boone.
And Kevin, I'm sorry, you probably already said everything, but I'm going to ask you anyway. So you have the Farm Bureau's support now, and what about the Soil and Water Districts?
Chair Cannon, Representative Boone, we have the Farm Bureau's support specifically on the modification to 196.905, the agricultural exemption. The Soil and Water Conservation Districts had come forward in the initial hearing. Their main concerns were with the change in the definition of intermittent stream, and they didn't have any particular comments related to the remaining portions of the bill that I'm aware of. So, in effect, we dealt with their concerns by removing that provision from the bill.
Katie, you want to speak to the
For the record, Katie Fast, Oregon Farm Bureau. We did work with DSL on the amendments and are okay with the amendments. I've also shared the dash twos with the chair of the Soil and Water Conservation District, Paul Reed, and I don't want to speak for them, but he did not fire back and say, what in the world did you agree to?
Okay. Thank you. Answers my question.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Thank you, Kevin. You can stick around because we'll do 2156. I'd like to move this bill along. There's no opposition that we are aware of. However, we are lacking the fiscal statement. I'm going to propose that perhaps we can get a rule suspension to simply move this on to Ways and Means and clear it from our calendar. So if I could get a motion on that. And Beth has a script.
Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2155 without the fiscal revenue impact statement being available for review.
And Representative Smith moves. Do I have to repeat this?
I do.
Okay. Representative Smith moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2155 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review. Motion is undebatable. Okay. Those of the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2155 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review will say aye. Oh, those opposed, no. And is there any objection to this motion? Seeing none, the rules are suspended. And now we need a motion on the dash twos.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 2155.
Representative Smith moves we adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 2155. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the dash twos are adopted, and a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt House Bill. Oh no, excuse me. I move that we move to the floor. Where is the thing I'm supposed to say? There it is. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2155 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Smith moves House Bill 2155 to the floor as amended, and that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means will be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Representative Bailey.
Wait, what?
Yeah, and I apologize for the confusion because I believe I misspoke. If I recall correctly, I may have said that this bill would be going to Ways and Means.
That we just suspended the rules for the purpose of moving the bill to Ways and Means.
No, we suspended the rules for the purpose of moving the bill without a fiscal impact statement. And I think we now have a motion before us to move the bill to the floor, rescinding the referral to Ways and Means. And is that what we intend to do,
That's
Beth?
What you intend to do.
Okay, let's
comment
let's
on
deal
that?
With this. Yeah,
okay.
Representative Barnard.
When a bill is in the current state and it goes back to the speaker's desk, at that point the speaker decides whether or not he wants to actually rescind the referral to Ways and Means or not. One presumes that if he gets a fiscal that says this costs $1 million, he will not rescind the referral to Ways and Means and require it to go to Ways and Means. If he gets a fiscal that says this doesn't have a fiscal, then he'll send it to the floor. Now, he doesn't have to. He could still send it to Ways and Means. But that's the process that we're voting on at this point. When we move to send a bill to the floor with and ask that the subsequent be removed, we're essentially asking the speaker for permission.
Right.
He doesn't have to grant the
permission.
He could require it to go to Ways and Means.
We do have a letter from the speaker. So what the speaker's office has told us about these either adding or rescinding referrals is that we need permission from the speaker to do so. He has ultimate control over that. But we have a letter in this case from the speaker authorizing us to rescind the subsequent to Ways and Means.
So he's already expressed his opinion that this doesn't have a fiscal.
That's correct.
All right. That answers my concern.
Any other concerns? Representative Bailey.
I apologize for my confusion, Mr. Chair. Clearly, it's all in order.
I believe, actually, I've helped add to the confusion by misspeaking, but Representative Gilliam.
How does the Speaker authorize in the letter before the bill's amended?
Can I explain?
Yeah.
Okay.
Help us out.
In this particular case, we took the original, the bill as it was originally drafted to the Speaker's office and asked for the approval to rescind the subsequent referral. Based on the amendment, which primarily removes language from the bill, takes out the definition of intermittent stream and all of that, it doesn't change the original decision to rescind the subsequent referral. So the other option is for the committee to maintain the subsequent referral, not move to rescind it, and then the speaker could make that choice when the bill goes to him.
He could take it off anyway.
I believe so.
Yeah. I think he could.
Representative Jensen.
I'm not sure. I want something else. I'm not sure exactly what Beth said at the very end, the last sentence of your comment that led to Representative Barnhart saying he can take it off anyway.
I think if the committee were to choose not to move to rescind the subsequent referral, so that the bill goes to the desk with the subsequent referral intact, it's my understanding at that point the speaker could remove the subsequent referral because it doesn't need to go to Ways and Means.
Representative Chair, I would, however, question whether or not I have to go back and look through the rules on this. But Representative Barnhart is correct on the process and the procedure, of this. But I would question whether or not the speaker can pre-authorize the rescinding of. And I realize ultimately he would have the power to do this because he could ask for a suspension of the rules, and given the fact that the majority of the, would support this. But I think your motion would be better stated if you left the will off and just say be suspended.
On the rules suspension, are you talking about?
The will be suspended, which is an absolute, which reflects, I think, what you, what your letter is saying and what you have been saying.
Which motion? Will be suspended, the rule suspension motion that we did for the purpose of moving a bill without a fiscal impact statement, or the rescinding of the subsequent two
the
ways
the last
means?
Motion that was made.
Yeah, which was, okay.
Will be, by just having be suspended, it leaves it to the power and jurisdiction of the speaker. It doesn't demand its suspension.
Okay, let's I think we're talking about rescinding, right?
Yes.
The subsequent. Well,
yeah.
I think it would be a relatively simple matter to withdraw the motion and restate it.
I withdraw the motion, Mr. Chair.
And will you take another shot at it?
Thought we were friends, man. Thought we were friends. Is this right?
Yeah.
From the top here?
You're up here.
This one?
Yes.
And this is...
2155.
And this is...
Joey's name.
And great. Mr. Chair, I move 2155 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Smith moves 2155 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Any further discussion? Representative Gilliam.
I'd like him to read it without the paper.
I didn't use...
I tried that.
So mean, man. So mean. I don't think you should get to vote.
Sorry. Yeah, what difference does it make? I can't vote.
Yeah. I don't want my voting on.
Sue, will you please call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. Is there any objection to placing this on the consent calendar? Seeing none, it will be an item for the consent calendar, and let's close the work session on 2155, open a work session on 2156, and Kevin, another DSL bill. Tell us about it, please.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, Kevin Moynihan, Assistant Director, Department of State Lands, Wetland and Waterway Conservation Division. Really glad to have a front row seat to that education on legislative process that I just saw. But as a reminder, House Bill 2156 is an effort by the department to get involved in not only wetland mitigation banking, which is something that the department has been involved in for some time now with a great deal of success through the current 20 active wetland mitigation banks and a very vigorous payment in lieu program for wetland impacts, but also to provide for similar options for impacts to other waters of the state, including streams. So in order to do that, we needed to change some of the language in the existing statute that refers, to example, to the Oregon Wetland Mitigation Bank Revolving Fund. That language has been in the statute for some years now. To get involved in stream banking, for example, to allow payments into a payment in lieu fund for stream impacts, we need to change the language. The original hearing brought forth concerns, including those from Department of Water Resources, Representative Vance in particular, and others, that the language changes we initially proposed were too expansive, that they could be read to allow the Department of State Lands to be involved in the mitigation of things like water allocation or water capacity issues or things of that nature, which was not our intent. Our intent was specifically to allow, again, for mitigation for removal fill-related impacts to waters of the state as defined in our statute. So subsequently, as reflected in the amendments, the Department of State Lands has had conversations with the Department of Water Resources that you will see reflected in the language. We have talked to the Oregon Water Resource Congress about these changes, as they also had some similar concerns. And the changes in the amendments, you'll see additions along the lines of compensating for removal fill-related impacts, and also making clear that compensatory mitigation for removal fill activities does not affect permit requirements of other state departments. So again, it was not our intent that we get involved in authorizations or programs at other departments like Department of Water Resources, Department of Environmental Quality, ODFW, are involved in. And the final change that I'll note for you is, along those lines as well, if we're going to change the name of the Oregon Wetland Mitigation Bank Revolving Fund, our proposal, as reflected in the amendment, would be to change the name to the Removal Fill Mitigation Fund. Again, making clear, specifying that it's for removal fill-related impacts and mitigation only. So with that said, I'll be happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I missed the portion that you referred to having to do with the limitations, and you had a set of words, and I simply am not finding them. Could you point to where they appear?
Sure. Chair Cannon, Representative Barnhart, on the first page that I have.
That's the problem.
On line 9, for example, on the first page.
Yes.
The word removal fill related is added, as I referred to, and then if you go down to line 11 on the same page, compensatory mitigation for removal fill activities does not affect permit requirements of other state departments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you mentioned those, I was already on page 7 or 8, and so I missed them. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion or, any other questions for Kevin on the bill? Well, let's let Representative Gilliam give it a try. Would you make a motion to suspend the rules? It's at the top of the page.
Really? To suspend the rules?
Yeah, for the purpose of. I'll be clear. We're going to suspend the rules unless there's objection to doing so. We will suspend the rules for the purpose of moving this bill along without its fiscal statement. Representative Barnhart.
Before we do that, could I inquire of the witness whether he believes it doesn't have a fiscal impact?
Sure. Good question.
Chair Cannon, Representative Barnhart, we do not currently believe it has a fiscal impact for our agency in terms of any work that would be required following these amendments. We have the capacity to handle right now. We already deal with mitigation for these types of impacts to waters of the state other than wetlands, and therefore, right now, we're providing another option for that type of mitigation, but it's really not adding any staff capacity or fiscal impact to our program.
Yeah, Representative Gilliam.
May I ask you to just expand a little bit on this last part of the background? It says if they're unavoidable, the adverse effects are unavoidable, replacing or providing comparable substitute wetland stream or other water resources. Can you just say a little bit more about what that means?
Chair Cannon, Representative Gilliam. So what that means is we try to replace the impacts from any particular removal fill activity so that the functions that were impacted are replaced with the same functions in terms of mitigation. If that is not possible for whatever reason, then we look for comparable or substitute mitigation. We practice that with a reasonable eye. In some cases, it's just not feasible to produce exactly the same mitigation for what the impact was that was caused by the activity.
Follow up. So that's at the same site of wherever this is happening. This is not an exchange of locations. This is the same place.
Chair Cannon, Representative Gilliam, we try to do it at the same place. That is the first choice. There's a hierarchy. There's a triage that you look to. If you can replace it at the same place, then that is the preferable option. Then from there you go to as close as you can get. Then you go to can you do it on the same stream. Then you go to can you do it in the same watershed. And then beyond that, if for whatever reason you can't do any of that, you look for something else that's relevant, that's related to the impact, as close as you possibly can.
Interesting. Thank you.
You want to make a motion?
I do, Mr. Chair. I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2156 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review.
Representative Gilliam moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2156 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review. Is there any opposition?
No opposition, Mr. Chair, but had we already adopted the dash twos?
No, I could be sequencing this oddly, but we have not. No opposition. The motion carries, and the rules have been suspended, and now we'll need a motion on the dash twos. Go ahead, Representative Gilliam, you're on a roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2156 be adopted now.
Representative Gilliam moves that the Dash 2 amendments be adopted now. House Bill 2156 be adopted now. Any discussion? The Dash 2s. Any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. The Dash 2s are adopted. And now you get the really fun one, which is that one.
That's my motivation. No, I'm just kidding. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2156 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Gilliam moves House Bill 2156 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion? And Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey. Aye. Representative Barnhart. Aye. Representative Benson.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye. And the motion carries, and 2156 is on its way to the floor. Is there any objection to putting it on the consent calendar? Seeing none, so moved. We'll add 2156 to the consent calendar. Thank you very much, Kevin, for all your work on these two bills. And let's close the work session on 2156 and open a work session on House Bill 3123. Representative Bailey, we have amendments since we last talked about this bill.
We do, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank Representative Gilliam's favorite agency, DEQ, for working with us to get this to a place where I think we have a good, shall we say, backup piece of legislation. We wanted to address potential fiscal impact issues, and what we have here is essentially a bill that replaces the bill as it was written that would create a study of the problem of dumping of sewage and hazardous waste in Oregon coastal waters. Our hope is that we can continue to work with DEQ and stakeholders to find potentially another way to look at this bill over in the Senate again and get a little bit more action this session, but this is what we could come up with before moving it out of this committee.
So we have Dash 2 amendments prepared by Representative Bailey. Is there any, even before we take it, well, why don't you make a motion on the Dash 2s, Representative?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2s dated 4-17-09 to House Bill 3123.
Representative Bailey moves the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3123 dated 4-17-09. Any discussion, Representative Bailey?
Or Barnhart?
Sorry, Representative, we'll start with Gilliam.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I remember some discussion about the amount of the fee in the previous bill. How's that addressed in this one, if I can ask?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, there's no fee in this amendment.
Thank you.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill doesn't seem like it does any. This amendment doesn't do much, does it?
Representative.
We make it a policy that the policy of the state to protect and quality of water by, to the extent allowed by a United States Code provision prohibiting the discharge of sewage from passenger vessels. This doesn't, it's a policy to prohibit, but it doesn't actually prohibit it, does it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, the Dash 2 amendment essentially sets a policy and then directs a study. So it is an interim study by DEQ that they tell me they're able to do with existing resources to come back to the next legislative session with a way to address the problem.
The problem is, if I may, Mr. Chair, the problem then is actually that we don't have the money to enforce a prohibition against dumping sewage on our surfers and beaches and other places like that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart.
Quite disappointing.
I share your disappointment. My understanding in talking with DEQ is that it's not the money for the enforcement. It's that under federal law, there is a complex application process that is necessary under the Clean Water Act to apply to the federal government for the ability to implement these regulations, and that given our current economic situation, that there isn't sufficient general fund revenue to carry out that application. And so as an interim measure, we are hoping to study potential ways to be able to do this. And we have, some potential solutions that would be general fund neutral that would allow for more action during this biennium. Those are still under discussion, and for the time being, our hope is to move this out of the House, get it over to the Senate, where the Senate committee can take a look at some of those options and decide if they're viable.
Okay.
So, is that clear?
Yeah, it certainly helps. So perhaps we could ask the Oregon Surfers and Beachcombers Association to fill out that application for us. I'm sorry about being flip. I find this very disappointing. I'll support it to get it to the Senate, but it's too bad we can't actually do it.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll add something to the bill I signed on to. I share your feelings. There was a program some time ago called Don't Teach Your Trash to Swim. Out of Depot Bay, Fran Reck ran it. And it was it was because of the trash in the ocean coming up on the, it washes in. And people got on board, even the fishermen, when they came into port, people made sure there were enough trash bins to put the trash in, so they didn't just offload it. And they did bring it back in, and fishing trips can generate a lot of trash, you know, if they're more than a couple of days. And it was very successful, and kids got on board, and I think that would be a great idea to include them in whatever study goes forward to as ways to educate people in this. And that's, I know that's very kind of cheesy, but it will help at least in the territorial sea, which is the only area we can affect. So that's 3 miles.
Any further discussion? Representative Gilliam? Yeah.
Despite the frustration that the hooking up with the federal standard might cause us, it is true that at least we have, it is illegal from a federal, at a federal level, to dump or to flush or whatever. Isn't that true?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, my understanding is that the whole purpose of the bill was because it's currently not prohibited in Oregon waters to dump some of these wastes.
Well, my last comment, if I may, Mr. Chair, I thought, maybe I heard wrong, was that while the federal government's doing very little about it, that it, I want to say, technically is illegal. We are the missing link on the coast. Oregon is the missing link to have our own statute, but that it is illegal. But maybe I misunderstood that in the previous testimony.
Mr. Chair, we can get that cleared up, but it is true that Oregon is the missing link in terms of state policies on the West Coast.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any further discussion on the Dash 2s? Seeing none, is there any objection to the Dash 2s? There is none, and the Dash 2 amendments are adopted. And Representative Bailey, do you want to make a motion on the...
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3123 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey moves House Bill 3123 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I didn't even have any paper, Mr. Chair.
What's that?
I didn't even have any paper, Mr. Chair.
That's the easiest one.
Very well.
We all know that one.
This is an easy one. Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cannon?
Aye. And the motion carries. Carrier, Representative Bailey.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Boone, hopefully you'll speak to this bill on the floor as well. That would be great. Your name is also
on. Should I say that my Dash 5s were also just a study?
We can talk about that on Tuesday when it comes back up. We are going to carry over the work session on House Bill 3161. We are going to carry over the work session on House Bill 3177. We're going to carry over the work session on House Bill 2184 and carry over the work session on House Bill 3454. Carry over the work session on House Bill 3604, all until Tuesday, April 28th. And Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My notes don't reflect, and it may be I just didn't write it down, what we did on House Bill 2186 or House Bill 3369.
2186, we adopted the -6 amendment, but we did not entertain any motion to move it to the floor. And the other...
And is that going over?
That is... yes, so I'll state it again. We're carrying over the work session on House Bill 2186. And 3369 is posted for Tuesday, and we will hear it on Tuesday, along with several others. We have just two bills left, according to my notes, and I'm actually going to ask the committee to stand at ease for just a moment. The committee will stand at ease. 6. And Representative Roblin and Representative Boone, help us out.
Oh, it didn't go over. Okay.
That one has not gone over. We have two left to do, members, just so you get your files maybe in better order than mine. We will be dealing just in the next few minutes with House Bill 3106 and House Bill 3013, and we'll be really not dealing with House Bill 3013. We'll be sending it on to House Rules without recommendation as passage. But 3106 we will hear from our colleagues about now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My committee. Deborah Boone, House District 32, the beautiful Upper Left Coast. And I'm here with my buddy, Representative Roblin, to present to you a wonderful bill. This bill will do, he will give all the details because he's the smart one in the group here. But this bill will create a task force on nearshore research, and this task force will bring forth the research that we are needing on the coast, fisheries, marine environment, habitat, et cetera, et cetera. We have a lot of work to do, put it that way. There's a lot of unknowns about the ocean. This is something that we can get behind, and this will help our coastal communities, our fisheries, everything. And I'm going to be very brief because this is all about the task force. But this was my good buddy, Representative Roblin's idea, and you should support it for that reason alone. If not, that it's one of the best things we can do for our coastal communities, especially in these hard times. We are experiencing blow after blow in different ways, and most recently some closures of fisheries. And some of the research that's going on in OSU at the Marine Hatfield Science Center and other institutions along the coast can only be bettered by this bill and what this bill will do and this task force and the work that they will bring forward. I will turn it over to my buddy now. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Representative Boone. Representative Arne Roblin from House District 9, and a little known fact of our great legislative body. The two people sitting in front of you both attended the University of Washington in Oceanography back in the 1970s. I was trying to be nice.
Thank you.
Early 70s.
Late 60s.
So this is an interest of mine since childhood, actually, and I'm sure that's true of Representative Boone. She happened to grow up in the inner city of a large metropolitan part of Oregon. I grew up in a coastal community called Port Angeles, Washington. And for me, one of the things that's been missing since I've been here is actual research on the nearshore. What do we know? And I guess the issue is we have more questions than we have answers. That will probably always be the case with scientists. But we haven't had a way to go about systematically organizing what kind of information do we need to gather, how to gather that information, and how to make it the kind of science that everybody recognizes as good science. And that's a definition that keeps having a problem at times in our Coastal Caucus and I think in discussions with others. But what this particular bill does is it puts into statute the ability to put together a group, and it lists all the members of that, from people from the Oregon Marine Biology Institute to Sea Grant people to people from the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and then it keeps going down to fishermen and others, local government people. It puts together a team that is going to help identify what are we talking about when we talk about having a nearshore research institute. What are some of the characteristics of that research? That it will be totally open, so that when we design the experiment that we're going to go out and test in the ocean, how we do that will be a part of what's open to everybody. The information we gather, the raw data, will be available to anybody that wants to replicate and look at it. And in the end, the conclusions that those scientists draw, who are doing the research, can be compared with other scientists. And finally, we'll have information that we can make better decisions on. And our other hope was that in doing this, that we develop protocols that allow our regular fishing fleets and the other people to be the people who gather the data. We've done that in the past since the 80s. It has been valuable not only to the local people, but also to the scientists involved, and it means you don't have to have big research vessels, you just need to have people. This is an attempt over the next 2 years to come back to the legislature with what this should look like and how we start making an institute. When I first started this, I thought it would be an easy task, and I ran into so many different people with different ideas that I finally came to the conclusion that we really need to do this Oregon's way. And Oregon's way is you get a group of people together who start coalescing around ideas until we get something that everybody in the community can agree with, and then we move forward. And I think that's what this bill does. It also does a simple thing in funding. Its funding comes from the new Carissa settlement, $100,000 from that settlement, which would be used to fund this this group over the next 2 years. And again, it takes resources from the coast, the new Carissa settlement, and puts them back at helping create the economic and informational knowledge base that we need to have for the coast again. So I would really encourage you, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer it. I know that Ed Bowles is here. He's been involved in that. He could answer questions if you have any questions from the department. I just think that... We've had large groups of people working at narrowing this down, and eventually got down to smaller groups of people who everybody else trusted to come up with this final draft. And we finished working on this draft this morning at 11 o'clock, and they got it to you today at 3 o'clock because I think everybody was invested in making it happen. So thank you. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thanks, Representative Rubin. Representative Gilliam.
Two quick things. Which one is the Hatfield Marine Science Center?
Newport, Oregon.
Is it
Phone?
Is it part of the group here, A through G?
I'm sure that it will be. Let me go through and make sure that it isn't. They have been one of the people that helped write this whole thing. So
Superintendent of the Coastal Oregon Marine Experiment Station. That's
not, there.
That's in OIMB. That's down in Coos Bay. Oregon Sea Grant is located in the buildings at Newport. Fish and Wildlife, Oregon Coastal Services Division of the Department of Land Conservation and Development, Oregon Coast Zone Management Association, members from the government, one member of local government. Wow, that's pretty good. Gil Sylvia, I don't know how many people know him. He runs the, what's the name of that group?
I want to say, it's not Cruise.
No, he does the cruise project.
Too.
Come on up.
Come on up, Anna.
Anna has the answers.
Oh, the Coastal Oregon Marine Experiment Station,
Combs,
as opposed to the Marine Biology Station. The Experiment Station is Combs. That is Newport.
That is. Paul, do you have any objection to making sure that the name is in there?
Pardon?
Do you have any objection to making sure the name, the Hatfield Science Center, is in there?
No.
And my second question is...
Except that it's a different... the Marine Hatfield Center includes a whole bunch of different groups, and we wouldn't know which person it was.
So you need to... so you
could, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
And my last question is this.
Yes.
We're trying... The problem is the needs and the challenges of nearshore resources. Give us an example of one of those challenges that we're trying to get at, because I'm not a graduate of the...
There are a number of species that fish that we catch every year, and it's part of our economy. We have a requirement that we do studies on how many fish are out there. We have done, is it seven? We've done six. How many more do we have?
I think we've got
35. We have 65 left to do. Any one of those could come back and be the spotted owl of the ocean. Getting the information now so we know where we're at so we can continue to work correctly with those is one little thing. That's just for the things that we catch, okay? We have had a number of increasingly large events on toxicity in our ocean due to lack of oxygen. We don't know exactly. We have ideas about how upwelling and not upwelling create some of those dead zones. We haven't done a lot of... We haven't had the opportunity to do a lot of experiments with regard to that. We have 5% of our ocean floor mapped and they enter that 5-mile deal. Representative Boone has been working on mapping for a long time, so we really don't even know the topography of the ocean floor that's out there. We don't have the life histories of many of the critters that the other critters eat. So there's a whole bunch of information that we could work on over the next few hundred years.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, we could take a motion on the dashboard site.
Aren't we in public hearing?
It is public.
No, I opened a work session on this.
Oh, okay.
Because we heard the bill already.
Yep.
And we're now in work session. I guess before we get to the motion,
right.
We don't have the fiscal impact statement. It does, however, have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. I would state for the record that there will be some challenging conversations, I think, in Ways and Means. And I say that if only because I've heard New Carissa and money in a number of different contexts over the last several months of budget presentations down there. So making sure that we, you know, spend that money the way that we are expected to and meet the commitments that we made will be a challenge, but an important thing to do in that Ways and Means subcommittee. So.
May I speak to that?
Yeah.
We have talked to the co-chairs of that subcommittee about this particular issue, at least to Mickey, and we'll talk to our other co-chair about that New Carissa money. We recognize it in the governor's budget. He had some set aside for seafloor mapping. We had others set aside for reserve issues. We've had some set aside for this. And I think that from the Coastal Caucus perspective, we're willing to continue to work with the Ways and Means people to help people understand why that's important for some of those very issues that we're talking about. So I look forward to the opportunity to talk with the Ways and Means people.
And I'd like to add on to that is that in that same vein, we have much support for that. Plus, part of the biggest part of keeping that money whole in serving the coast, and especially the mapping piece of it, was a huge issue in the leveraging of almost $6 million in NOAA federal funds now for the same purpose. And that Carissa money from Oregon represents the dedication of the state to serving this, using this money on the coast. And it's a huge leveraging vehicle for us in that sense. We'll triple our money, basically, if we get that amount. And we'll get, instead of 30% of the mapping finished, we'll be up around 70%. And some of the NOAA mapping that's going on right now in the mouth of the Columbia and upriver a little bit will bring it back down. They've just done their priority list for their mapping preferences if they get the federal money. And they will complete several very important studies that serve the mouth of the Columbia, and which addresses, in addition to other things, the shipping and that the big spoils piles that pile up there and can tip over loaded crab boats very easily. So this is something that's very important that we get finished. And the other mapping that's done, in addition to the NOAA boat, we use the local fishermen in their smaller boats in the nearshore area too. So it's we can use them for mapping. We could use them for this research and keeping these fishermen busy when they're not able to fish, when they have closures or whatever reasons they can't. It keeps them working, and that's what we need.
Any further?
Even Rep. Bailey can vote for this one too.
Any further discussion? Let's do it. Let's go ahead and move this down. If there isn't objection, we'll get to that. It will require a rule suspension, but it will mean one less item on our calendars on Tuesday, and I think we're pretty clear about what this would cost financially.
Yep.
And the way that fiscal is likely to look, and the Ways and Means Committee will
have to decide.
We'll deal with it. Representative Smith?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say on the record that I really appreciate you guys bringing this bill, and I know that it's been a pleasure to be on this panel with you, and you've been very gracious in letting members of this committee and others testify before your committee and bring bills to your committee, and I imagine that's going to continue in the next few weeks to the maybe the detriment of your committee, but to the betterment of the process. So I just wanted to say thanks a bunch. I know this is an important matter for your constituencies in your area, and I just thought we ought to put some on the record.
Great.
Thanks.
Representative Boone, do you want to join us back here for the working part of this? Who wants it? Yeah, let's start with the amendment. Let's get a motion on the dash four amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash four amendments dated 4/23.
Representative Smith moves to adopt the dash four amendments dated 4/23. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion is successful and the amendments are adopted. And now we need the rules suspension.
Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 4123.
What are you talking about?
What I had, 3123. That's what I need to say.
Oh, so 4123 is actually April 23rd.
Yes.
Okay. That's fine.
I'm going to withdraw your incomplete motion and start over.
I got another bell idea that I'd like to discuss with the committee. Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3106 without the fiscal impact statement being available
and
for review.
The
fiscal and revenue statement being available for review.
Representative Smith moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3106 without the fiscal or revenue impact statements being available for review. Is there any opposition? Seeing none, the rules are suspended, and now we need a motion on the bill. And Representative Boone, do you want to give us a motion? I'll send it down to you. And
this isn't fair. Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash four amendments.
No, let's try the one.
The second one.
Yes,
Mr. Chair, I hit that second gavel. I move House Bill 3106 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Boone moves House Bill 3106 to the floor as amended and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, as I stated before, I do need to declare a conflict of interest on this bill. It directly affects a member of my immediate family.
Any further discussion?
Now you have to tell.
He has satisfied his obligation under the rules of this House.
But not our curiosity.
But not our curiosity. And Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. And the motion carries. 3106 is off to Ways and Means. And our last business for today, did I get this carryover? I think I did.
Yes.
Let's open a work session on House Bill 3013. Members, we are planning to move this bill to House rules without recommendation. It will be the vehicle for some additional work. Arnie, do you want to say just a few words about why we should be sending off a bill relating to ocean policy to your committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Arnie Roblin, House District 9. The relating clause in this bill works very well for a conversation that the Coastal Caucus has been having for the last few weeks regarding the recommendations that were made by OPAC with respect to reserves. And we have been working with the Governor's Office. We've been working with others to craft language which would be help direct the department as they move forward in the reserve conversation and implementation. And we believe that we are very, very close with, I think, maybe our, 14th Amendment. We don't keep getting them back, but we get them, we check it out with everybody, and we change some words, and we're really close. We have a couple more to do, but we think we are finding a way in which all the parties can agree to an implementation of the results of the OPAC process that took place over the last number of years with respect to reserves. And I'll put on the record that we are working with all these different partners, and if we can get a consensus that all those partners agree with, they may not all like everything about it, but that they believe moves forward, then we will put it into this bill, and see if we can move it out of rules. If we aren't getting a consensus, then we'll have to figure out where we go from there, but we will not use this unless there's a consensus. And I've said that to everybody before, and I don't mind putting it on the record here.
I appreciate that, Representative Rivlin. And I think you can also confirm that this bill will certainly look nothing like its current form if it does come.
I would be glad to say that this current form of this bill will not be, as people know, there's a little internal word called gut and stuff, and this bill, what's there will be removed, and another group of stuff that a lot of people can agree to, and will be in its place.
Any discussion with Representative Roblin? Any questions for him?
And the one other thing I would like to say is, and if there are people on this committee who want to keep involved with that process, I would have no problem sharing with them the results of different things as we move forward. So just let me know. Anna, who has been working with our Coastal Caucus, would be glad to share the kinds of things to the point where we are right now with people. So we'll keep in touch with people.
Thank you. With that, I think we can take a motion on moving this bill to rules without recommendation. You have a script on this, too?
Do
we need to do... I guess we should suspend the rules since we don't have the fiscal impact statements. It's your turn, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you so much. Did she put the number in? Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3013 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review.
And
Representative Gilliam moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3013 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review. Is there any...
I have a query.
You do, and we...
Parliamentary query, if I may.
I actually have to rule out your query. My understanding is this motion is undebatable.
Yeah, and I'm not going to debate it. I have a query about the motion.
Your query is accepted.
Thank you. Shouldn't that motion also include the revenue impact statement, because I don't think we have one of those either.
Do we have a revenue statement on this?
Yes.
We do have a revenue
statement. Then I remove that. Thank you. That answers my inquiry, Mr. Chair.
Okay. No debate. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none. So moved. The rules are suspended. And we simply need a motion that looks something like that.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3013 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Smith moves House Bill 3013 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
This is an outrage.
Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to just thank Representative Roblin for his commitment to making this a consensus process, and that I also really appreciate his offer to the people on this committee to remain involved and connected with it in an open process, and I'll look forward to following up on that.
Thank you. Any further discussion, Representative Gilliam?
I wish I could support the bill, but with the Jefferson Smith Railroad in place, I just... All right, I'm okay.
That's a good idea.
Gilliam, you know it's good. You know,
let's see what you call the roll.
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Chair
Cannon. Aye. Motion carries. And I close the work session on House Bill 3013. Thank you, committee. We got a lot of work done today. We have a lot more to do on Tuesday. We can expect to be here till 6 o'clock.